The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio.
And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is the Steve Austin Show. Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I'm coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. I am over here at the house next door to 316 Gimmick Street, podcasting my ass off, opening this show like a motherfucker. Holy shit, man, the construction crew continues to work over at 316 Gimmick Street. When the guys were tearing out all the walls and shit in one of the rooms, they noticed that where the one of the light fixtures was, there was a leak coming in the house. So the contractor called his roofer over. Roofer looked at the house and said, "Hey, man, we need to take all them fucking shingles off and put some new shit down because they had jerry-rigged part of my roof from way back in the day when whoever put the roof on it was." Anyway, goddamn, it's, pretty good roof repair, and it's a pretty good damn check I'm going to have to write these sumbitches. So anyway, I'm going to get my roof straightened out. They got all the tiles off that sumbitch over there walking on top of my house. The construction's going on. I got the tile in my bathroom. Shit, we're about ready to start painting, and then they'll throw the floors down. Probably about another 3 weeks' worth of work, I'm hoping, but goddamn, you never know. But it's looking good over there, man. Shit, my bathroom's going to be badass. I'm looking forward to it. And get my office all settled down over there. But right now, I'm podcasting out of my little gimmick studio over here next door. I went down to Home Goods the other day with my wife and bought an area rug, 8 foot by 10 foot. I wanted one that was about 10 by 11 because this room is 11 foot by 11 foot 3 inches, and I wanted to cover up as much of that damn wood as I could to keep the sound from vibrating too much, echoing and bouncing off the walls. But I tell you what, 8 by 10 rug cost me a couple $100. The rugs over at Home Goods are a shit pile cheaper than them some bitches over at Home Depot. God damn, them some bitches are higher than your ass pussy. I just want something to walk on that looks pretty good, that'll kill the sound from bouncing off all the walls. I still got to hang some shit up to get the walls from settling down, but little carpet cost me a couple $100. Looks good. Feels good. Hershey the Wonder Dog came in here and started rolling all over it, marking it up, walking on her side like damn Curly from the Three Stooges used to do. So she's already claimed this fucking carpet as her own. I got my little chair set up here in the corner. I just need a table to put right over here so that when I got a guest coming over, I can use this as my podcast room. And as soon as I get finished doing the opening of this podcast and sending it to Stacy in the 90210, I'm going to head back over to 316 Gimmick Street and get into my garage and get some more of my neon signs to put over here so I can put a little atmosphere in this son of a bitch. Man, when I went over to buy this rug at Home Goods, if you ever go buy a big-ass rug, they got it like it's like a, you know, those things that hold the rugs up vertically, and it's like just thumbing through like an old memory book, except the pages are 8 by 10 or 10 by 12, some big-ass rugs. And I went over, and goddamn, it's just me and my wife looking for a rug. And I'll be damned if here comes these two ladies, and they got to stand and park their damn shopping cart right where we at. And they start looking at the exact same rug that I'm looking at. And I've been looking at this motherfucker for about 5 minutes. And I done opened all the damn rugs, looked through all of them, and I'm back to my original rug, 8x10, $299. So I'm thinking, okay, this is the sumbitch I want. And I'll be goddamn if these ladies start fucking with my rug, and I'm not going to say anything. Maybe she's going to buy the sumbitch from under me. And anyway, they move on to a different rug. And so when they moved on to a different rug, I went back over and looked at my rug. And here they come over here again. And they got to put their shopping cart right in the middle so you can't flip through no more rugs. I was already looking for plan B. You know, maybe this ain't the best rug in here. Maybe I can find one that's a little bit bigger. Maybe it's a little bit better. And I moved over about 8 foot down the road. And sure enough, they parked their goddamn cart right where I'm at again. So I whispered in my wife's ear, I said, man, what the fuck these motherfuckers doing? It's almost like they trying to run me off. It was like I started looking around. There got to be a hidden camera in here somewhere. Fuck. And then we went to another department, and I'll be goddamn if the ladies didn't come over. And every time we went somewhere in the store, them ladies was in the way. I don't know what's up with that. And then we went to Whole Foods, and the same shit happened there. I'm sitting there at the edge of the damn, the potato aisle. I was getting some potatoes and some sweet potatoes for my carbs. Lady just out of the blue pulls her cart right up in front of mine. And she just standing there. And she got sunglasses on. She's an older lady. And I'm thinking, why the fuck did she got to pull her cart with a big-ass Whole Foods store and a lady got to pull her cart right in front of mine and just kind of stand there? And I'm thinking to myself, what the fuck is this lady doing? My wife's over there grabbing shit and putting it in bags. You know how you put your vegetables in bags and stuff. So I'm just standing there just waiting for this lady to move. I can back up and go around her, but it was almost like a rib. So I was going to rib her. I said, I'll just stand here and see how long she stays there. She wasn't moving. So fuck, I backed my goddamn cart out. And as soon as I started leaving, she pulls her cart out of the way and starts moving down a different aisle. I think people was intentionally trying to fuck with me while I was buying my goddamn rug from a podcast studio and trying to buy my fucking vegetables from a goddamn eating diet I got over here. Son of a bitch, people got no awareness of space or etiquette anymore. And the two ladies that was looking at the rugs, they were speaking, they didn't speak English. They spoke, I don't know where, somewhere in Europe. It was a different kind of language I'd never heard. So, but, you know, obviously whether you're from a foreign country or not, you got to understand that you're in somebody's space. I was there first. Had the ladies been there first, I'd have been, working around them. And then the other lady, when she pulled her shit up next to my cart, man, I don't pull my cart up and block somebody in. Nobody gives a fuck anymore. It's like there's no etiquette or awareness. People got their head up their ass. I don't know. Anyway, shit, we drove home. And I told my wife when we left the Home Goods, I said, you can go ahead and drive. And my wife goes, oh, you want me to drive? I said, yeah. Normally, I got to be behind the wheel of a car. I always like to drive, but I was having one of those days where I just want to kind of chill out and relax. I said, no, you drive, because every time we get in the goddamn car, basically what I wanted to do was flip the script on my wife, and because she always bitches about me going too fast, this, that, whatever, and I was just acting like I was being chauffeured around, riding in the shotgun seat, just chilling, and I said, you know what, as a global icon and national treasure, it's kind of nice being driven around for once. And then when we came into the damn Home Goods parking lot, every time we go somewhere, most time my wife has to give me directions if I don't know exactly where we're going because I don't remember my way around Los Angeles. So I'm okay where they're giving me directions. But then once we get to the store that we're going to, she's got to point out of thousands of parking spots, she's got to park out the slot that she wants me to pull into. And I'm always like, goddamn, it's okay for you to give me directions to get here, but once we get there and I can see the store, Home Goods, for example, I can pick out a spot on my own. I'm not that fucking stupid. So anyway, to reverse the rib, as soon as we got to Home Goods, I started pointing to my wife, no, take her right here. Take her right here. Yeah. How'd you like that when I flipped the script on you the other day? And I tell you,
very annoying.
Yeah, well, that's what you are. You're very annoying. I don't mind you giving me directions around Los Angeles because I don't know my ass from a hole in the ground in the city. But when you get to the parking lot, I can find a goddamn empty parking spot on my own. So how'd you like that? Touche. My damn wife. I just sent a picture out on my Instagram account. Steve Austin BSR. That's a picture of my wife taking Hershey, the Wonder Dog, and Mula to the vet for a checkup and driving my trusty 2003 Ford Focus. I was reading some of the comments on there and said, goddamn. He goes, Austin, you got to keep her. And then because my wife's driving a 2003 Ford Focus, and someone else said, goddamn, dude, why don't you buy your wife a new car? Hey, man, that Ford Focus ain't got but 65,000 miles on it. That sumbitch is probably good for 300. Shit, I bought that motherfucker from my mother-in-law a couple months ago, and I put a car cover over it when we went hunting in South Texas for 2 months. Man, I pulled that car cover off. It started right up, took it down, just knocked a little bit of the dust off of it. So that's our car that we use to take the dogs to the vet because it's so low to the ground. It's easy for, I still got to put Hershey in there because she's getting older. Mula, fuck, she could jump in a 4x4 with a lift kit. She's got some springs on her because she's young, but it's easy for her to get in there. And actually, that little motherfucker's fun to drive. It's front-wheel drive, got a little fucking four-cylinder, automatic. It'd be cool if it had a manual transmission. I like shifting them gears. But goddamn, man, that's a great little errand car. Motherfucker runs like a champ. Shit, I drive that motherfucker all the time. Anyway, hey, man, enough about all my bullshit. I got my podcast area getting set up over here at 317 Gimmick Street. Need to get me a table. See if we can get some guests coming over here. I got Zoltan Bathory, a five-finger death punch. I went over to his boat and talked to him. Rip Rogers is on today. I appreciate talking to Kevin Owens. Got a lot of feedback from the conversation with Kevin Owens, talking about the scientific and molecular level of giving a stone cold stunner and see how he absorbs that information. Man, we've got a real big weekend coming up. We've got UFC 209, and that's going to be a hellacious event. And then on Sunday, goddamn, WWE got Fastlane. Last pay-per-view, Jesus Christ, last pay-per-view before WrestleMania. I cannot believe WrestleMania is already here. It is almost upon us. And it seems like that other one just happened. And, man, it was just like going to the Staples Center the other day, man. All those guys and gals, you know, the boys, the girls coming into the damn dressing room, been on the road traveling. It's a rough grind, and this is always the crescendo, getting to the biggest show of the year, packing people in that stadium, hoping for that damn sellout, people coming from all over the world. It's a global happening. It's a big fucking deal, and they've been working their ass off. I'm looking forward to watching it. We're going to see what happens on Fastlane. Hopefully, it's a great pay-per-view. I'd love to break it down, and I'm going to watch it and see how it pans out, see what they're going to do to put the final pieces on the chessboard, and they'll have a couple of more weeks to start rearranging those things as well, but kind of really get some matches on the card that you can really promote. You've had a few that you could talk about, but now really hammer the card down and make the final push into WrestleMania. And looking forward to big things from everybody on the roster. Man, that's the place if you can get off at Mania. You always want to get off. You always want to have a badass match, but WrestleMania is the ultimate proving ground, and it's a chance for big things to happen, and it's the biggest stage that you can perform on if you're in the business of pro wrestling, or as they like to call it, sports entertainment nonetheless. Hey, man, like I said, I got Rip Rogers on the podcast. But before we get to Rip, I need to take a minute here to thank one of the fine sponsors of this here podcast, and that is Loot Crate. And Loot Crate's part of the greatest tag team in crate history, the WWE Slam Crate. It's a bi-monthly mystery subscription service for fans of the WWE Universe. And the third crate is ready to order now. This one is all about the road to WrestleMania, and it celebrates the superstars who live, eat, breathe, and sleep this journey. And I'm not just talking about the stars who will be in the squared circle on April 2nd in Orlando, Florida. I'm talking about past WrestleMania stars too, and that's why this crate is loaded with exclusive items featuring The Rock, Seth Rollins, and Charlotte, one of my favorites, and many other WWE superstars. There's also an authentic t-shirt that you can't get anywhere else. So sign up at lootcrate.com/unleashed by March 19th at 9 p.m. PST, or you'll miss it and you will regret it. So go to lootcrate.com/unleashed and use the promo code Austin at checkout to get $3 off your Road to WrestleMania Slam Crate now. That's lootcrate.com/Austin and use the promo code Unleashed to save $3. But do it now, because once that March 19 deadline passes, so does your chance to get this crate. Order now at lootcrate.com/Austin. Hey, y'all know how much I appreciate you listening to this podcast twice a week, and that's why we've created a new automated email system to make sure you never miss a single episode. Just go to podcastone.com/Steve Austin and sign up. We'll let you know exactly when a new show is out and who the guest is. So sign up now at podcastone.com/Steve Austin. That's podcastone.com/Steve Austin.
So far in 2017, Forbes and Podcast One have already launched three highly acclaimed shows. The Interview with Steve Bertone features the business world's most interesting names like Adam Carolla, Twitter founder Sean Rad, and Hollywood's own Jessica Alba.
So I spent a lot of my childhood in hospital and hospital beds.
Under 30 with Steve Goldblum talks to the movers and shakers like Nation Builder CEO Jim Gilliam and NFL big game winner Martellus Bennett.
Guys are afraid to be themselves because of their marketing deals.
And The List with Art of Charm's Jordan Harbinger.
We'll get behind the scenes insight and information that doesn't make the print cut.
Next up, Sports Money with Mike Ozanian talking to team owners, athletes and industry leaders about the enterprise and money behind supreme athletic competition. Forbes on Podcast One. Not just entertaining, informative. Subscribe now at iTunes and don't forget to rate, review, and share.
Steve Austin, Unleashed.
Unleashed. All right, here we go. I'm sitting here at 317 Gimmick Street. Goddamn, I always like to talk about the business of professional wrestling. And man, I was on Twitter the other night and I found Rip Rogers' Twitter account, Hustler2754. I'm guessing that's your birthday, February 7th, 1954. Rip Rogers, how are you?
Yeah, that's right. Twitter, baby, at Hustler2754. That's right. 63rd birthday the other day. Still kicking, ain't croaked yet.
How you feeling?
Oh, shit, I'm living the dream, baby, you know. Hell, you know, when you get run over and have a couple hips in you and neuropathy in your feet, shit, it don't get no better than that.
Hey, man, just to bring me up to speed, you just turned 63, and you were telling me the other day when I called you on the phone, you was down there. I guess you was in Louisville, Kentucky. I guess you're training at OVW. You got hit by a car and left. Was it hit and run?
Yeah, it was hit and run. At the time, OVW was developmental for WWE, and I was driving down to Louisville every day, and excuse my French, but they wouldn't give me any insurance. So I had to have another job at UPS at night to have insurance. So some girl at work come around the corner, knocked me dead in a hammer. Boom, I was down. I got her license plate number. And the two-time employee of the month, all of a sudden, I was the persona non grata because it made them look bad.
So what Except happened again? Were you in a car or you got hit by the car, just your person?
Oh, hell, I was come out of the office and stepped into the road in the parking lot, and one of their employees driving somebody else's car with no insurance, no et cetera, license or anything, they ran me over and took off, and I got their license plate number.
All right,
so that was lovely.
Now, years ago, we worked an angle. I had to go get my neck cut on. I had to get C3-4 fused. So we did a little gig in the parking lot where somebody come by, clipped a stunt double. All of a sudden, we stopped rolling film. I laid down. We start filming. And all of a sudden, somebody ran over Stone Cold to get him out of the picture. Okay.
Yeah.
Rip, that was an angle. And you saw the bump that guy took, if you saw it or whatever. But how fast was this lady going? What'd you do? Did you flip over the hood like a damn movie star? Did you go underneath the wheels? What happened? Because I'm sure it wasn't as glamorous as they would like to make on TV.
No, I wasn't expecting to bump, so I did put it over a little bit, but then I jumped right back up, and I had the adrenaline in me. In the meantime, I'm trying to get to go to work, and people are looking at me. I'm walking in there, and I'm fucking adrenalized up. So, hell, I just thought it was another night at the office, and I just knew everything was hurting. But anyway, a day in the life of the hustler, I guess.
So what did they do? You take you down to the emergency room? What was the diagnosis on?
Oh, yeah. A buddy of mine that worked next to me there in Small Sort, he took me to the emergency room. So I got out there about 1:30 in the morning. But the next day I was down to OVW, excuse me, in a goddamn wheelchair.
Hey, but that doctor told you something back in the day. He goes, "You'll probably be all right, but this is going to hit you down the road." You told me you started feeling it finally.
Yeah, I finally did. All of a sudden, my hips is throbbing, and my thing like you do your knee pull-ins, and my tendons right there are just killing me. I didn't know what the hell it was. I thought I'd pulled something, but I said, I ain't got nothing to pull anyway. But all of a sudden, I had to have one hip done and the other hip done, and then the Colts doctor, he did me the one hip, and it's the shits now, of course. And then some little redneck doctor from Seymour, Indiana, did the new style, and it's not like new, but it's twice as good as the other one. So small town over the big city boy once again.
Hey, man, how your knees doing and your shoulders?
Oh, I got two torn rotary cuffs. It don't matter. I've been I already got my 3 hours into gym today, doing my nothing but reps with almost no weight, and don't care. Get that little pump going, and all of a sudden, 5 pounds feels like 50. So what the hell, right?
Hey, man, I was reading one of your tweets you sent out, and I think you were working out, and we were talking just the other day. You said you're doing sets of 100 and so forth.
Yeah.
Said you had went to the bathroom because you had to puke. Dude, I ain't puked from working out in a long time, so maybe I need to pick up a little intensity tips from you. What did you do to make yourself puke from working out?
Just push faster and don't have any rest.
How much weight you got on the bar?
Oh, I use, they're all machines. All machines and cables.
So you got away from the free weights.
Oh, yeah, because it was just killing me, the free weights were. I'm not getting ready for the Olympia, so what the hell? I'm trying to look above average for the 63-year-old. Of course, the asshole, the gym says, oh, you look great for 63-year-old. I said, fuck you, motherfucker. You'll never look this good. You're in the prime of life. Go fuck yourself.
Hey, so how long have you been teaching down at OVW? You still doing it, right?
Yeah, I'll be down there Saturday and Sunday. Hell, it's been about 20 years, I'm thinking, close to that or whatever. So, hell, 64 people have got jobs with WWE, ROH, TNA, whatever. They come through the door in a beginner's class, not the guys they chose, you know, that you're our super stud, but guys that come in off the street, starting beginners. Well, hell, that was like Santino was one.
Yep.
Mike Mondo was one of the Spirit Squad. JTG, he was one. Armando Estrada. All these guys come in, beginner's class, got into my class, and then I taught them the old style wrestling. Everything was called in the ring, and everybody had to go an hour, and that's the way it was. And I said, if you get this shit down and you get a job, forget everything I goddamn told you, and you got to just do as you're goddamn told. But and that's what that's like. If you can get the heart, if you can learn this, when all of a sudden you have your what I call the prearranged bullshit matches of getting all your shit lined up, then you'll be able to handle anything.
If you were to get back in the ring, say everything was all copacetic with your body, would you be able to go into the ring with the prefab match?
With people lining their shit up? Hell no. No, I'm an artiste. I'm a heel calling this son of a bitch. You know, I had guys going doing 2-hour matches, you know what I mean? Just unbelievable, and they get this shit. Because I tell them you can't watch TV because you'll be confused, but those guys are rich, so what the hell, and that's what you want to be. So, but learn this shit from the ground floor, nothing but the nuts and bolts, the basics, and it's practice, 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 and you get this shit down pretty soon. Your body language will be there. Your facials will be there. You'll get all this shit. No matter how tired you are, you'll be able to think, and you'll be able to execute. So it's a labor of love, not very it's not helping the pocketbook very much, but I'm spiritually cleansed by it. How's that?
It's obvious that you still love the business. You still teach. You still care. I mean, most of your tweets are about wrestling. You love the business. When did you start paying attention to the business? Did you watch as a kid?
Oh, my God. When I was 5 years old, my grandpa taught me to see Dick the Bruiser versus Cowboy Bob Ellis at the high school where I grew up at in Seymour, Indiana. Then I was a member, and I got all the magazines. I used to have a whole shitload of magazines. About 7 or 8 of them would come out once a month. Hell, I was a member of the Handsome Jimmy Valiant fan club, and I'd watch Dick the Bruiser wrestling. I'd adjust those the antenna. I could get the Sheik's wrestling out of Cincinnati. I could get Louisville wrestling. Then I could get, on a good Saturday night, I could get Buzz Benson All-Star Wrestling out of Paducah, Kentucky. Damn, it don't get no better than that.
No shit. Hey, word on the street is you never went to a wrestling school. You learned from the guys in the ring, on the road, listening to cars. What age did you make your debut?
I was 22. I was teaching school, and I was a football coach. But all I wanted to do was get in the wrestling business. And I'm going, how in the hell do I get in the wrestling business? I mean, it was closed. It was kayfabe. They kayfabed me down at the matches at Indianapolis. I went and saw the commissioner. He was trying to help me out with Dick the Bruiser. Of course, he was pushing Bruiser, so that automatically Bruiser hated me because we didn't tell Dick the Bruiser anything. So a buddy of mine, now this old guy had this guy that wasn't even smart had a ring at a VFW club we got into a couple times. And we sort of broke in, but broke his boards and everything, but he didn't prosecute. But this buddy of mine named Steve Cooper, he went down to WOAY in Beckley, West Virginia and had a TV match. I didn't believe that asshole. So he taped the son of a bitch on the telephone of the audio part. So I got booked the next week. So that, and then this is an hour and a half story, which we're not going to do. So here I am in my first match. I got my K&H specials, my Carl Hildegard stuff, my $52 boxing boots, my 5-0 trunks. I'm dressed to fucking kill. And I just know, and I'm not even smart. I don't, and all of a sudden the guy says, oh, you're Bill Good. You go over. And I'm going, yeah, go over what? Right? He says, now when you get the pencil, you go home. I'm going, holy fuck, you know? So I'm wrestling some guy, and he tells me what to do. And I said, fuck you, grab my arm. Fuck you, motherfucker, you know. So he hits me. Boom, I'm over. That didn't even hurt. That son of a bitch ain't got a punch at all. Then he hits me again. Oh, fuck, right in the ear. Son of a bitch. Sell. I said, sell what, you know. But anyway, I made it through that one, and I'm watching him before the match. He's cutting the goddamn bleezade up, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there, holy shit, this motherfucker's going to fucking carve me up. I'm scared shitless. So anyway, so you can imagine what I went through. So, but from there, I got to go to Sheik's TV, Nick Goulas' TV, Bob Geigel's TV in Kansas City, St. Joe, and in the Chase Hotel there. And then a couple weeks later after that, I went and did the WWWF TV at the old Philly Arena. So, shit, I was on fire, baby.
Well, man, tell me a few stories about Dick the Bruiser, because I've only heard about the man, and I, you know, he's a little bit before me, and I didn't get that region of TV because I grew up in South Texas. But
right.
You know, I have a picture on your Twitter account of him back when wrestlers used to look tough, and Dick the Bruiser looked tough. I know he's a big draw. What was it about Dick the Bruiser that drew money?
That son of a bitch. Well, it's like you said, you don't cover anybody unless it's a finish. Nobody kicks out on the Bruiser, right? Unless it's a Texas death match and you drop 9 falls in 9 minutes adjusting his tights the whole time you're covering him, right? Oh, but he was just a physical freak. He could walk on his hands and shit, and he was probably legit 5'11", probably weighing up to 275 at one time. You know, played in the NFL, and he got kicked out of 3 colleges. And he was mischievous. Let's put it that way.
Well, how do you mischievous in what way?
This is sort of a PG show, isn't it?
No, this is Unleashed. You can say whatever you want to say.
Oh, it's Unleashed. So when he went to court for something, and they said he was accused of having performing fellatio or fellatio being performed on him or whatever, and he says, "I don't know, Judge. I just know the bitch was giving me a blowjob." So that's DB, Dick Bruiser, baby. So he would be driving down the highway in his fucking big-ass Lincoln or whatever. I just knew it was some expensive car, and I'm driving in my fucking Pinto. All of a sudden, the lights are off, and he's tapping me, boom, from behind. And I'm scared. What the fuck is it, right? And there he was. That was DB, Dick Bruiser, baby. But he had a... He had Indianapolis, and then he was partners with Gagne in Chicago, see? So there was that big payday. Then he was a big-ass card in St. Louis for I don't know how many years. And then Flair said he knew he had it made when he sold out the Checker Dome with Dick the Bruiser. Bruiser wasn't going to sell. He might register, and that's the way it was. But he was a hell of a draw, and he got banned from Madison Square Garden for life in 1957 for having a riot. Then he got banned in Cincinnati for throwing some woman that wasn't a plant in a wheelchair. He threw her out of the fucking wheelchair. And his mother was, I think, the head of the Democratic Convention or the Democrats in Indiana. So let's just say he got away with a lot of shit, which it was me. And then he ran Barnett out of town, and he took over, and Barnett went off to Australia, and Bruiser and Snyder took over Indianapolis. And then he also took over Louisville and Evansville, but he was too lazy to promote them, so he rented them out to Jerry Jarrett. So Jarrett was kicking back 10%, so Bruiser was sitting back getting paid, doing nothing. And that went on for a while, but Jarrett finally said, no, that ain't happening no more. But that was that, and you worked Jarrett's territory. So years ago, Louisville was on fire. Evansville was always a good club. But I'm rambling. Okay. Sorry.
Hey, so what was Dick's basic repertoire in the ring? Just a lot of offense and registering?
Hey, he was Stone Cold before Stone Cold was.
Interesting.
He was an aggressive, looked like a goddamn human bowling ball. He was so round, you know what I mean? Then he'd take those teeth out, and he'd register, and he'd spit, and he'd hit. Whenever he was the only guy, whenever he hit Heenan, he bled. Nobody else ever touched Heenan. But the Bruiser, whenever he hit Heenan, that son of a bitch was bleeding. And what a goddamn worker Heenan was when he was young. I mean, when he got to WWE, he was old, you know, for a performer. But when he was right. young, that son of a bitch could flip. He could flop like a fish. He used that Blizzade. He was bloody. That blonde, that ice white hair. And that was the good rib. Bobby the Brain had the ninth grade education. So,
goddamn, he was good.
He was just, oh, man. I remember he went to Atlanta, and he was off TV, and he come home to Indianapolis after like 3 years just to see his mother. He just hung out the matches. He stepped his head out of the dressing room. All of a sudden, the whole fucking building just started booing, screaming, and yelling shit. He just shook his fucking head, smiled, went back in the dressing room.
Still had heat.
Once you're over, you're over.
Right. Let's talk about some of the stuff you tweet, Rip. You're at Hustler2754 on Twitter, but before we go through some of your tweets, let me say congrats to my longtime sponsor and close personal friend, Diamond Dallas Page. He's going into the WWE Hall of Fame, and it ain't because of the success of DDP Yoga. He's going in because of his damn fine-ass wrestling career that he worked his ass off to have. God dang. Dude got in the ring at 35 years of age. One of the oldest cats to ever start out after being a manager forever. So big ass congratulations to my buddy Dallas. And thank you to Dallas and DDP Yoga. And if there were a Yoga Hall of Fame, I'd say Dallas would be inducted there too. For anyone listening to this podcast who's looking for some help and motivation with their own health and fitness plan, Dallas and DDPY are your answer. Dallas knows how hard it is to get on that path to healthier living and stick to it. And that's why he created the DDPY program, which is more than just a workout. Dallas gives you all the tools and all the information you need to eat better, exercise, and monitor your progress. Now, he also offers plenty of his own personal motivation as well. And right now, he's offering y'all 25% off the DDPY DVDs, the DDP Yoga Now app, and all DDPY swag. You can get 25% off t-shirts, mats, heart monitors, hats, and more. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin, and that ain't all. If you buy the DDPY Max Pack today, you'll get 50% off your second copy. So that's 50% off the 25% you're already getting. If that ain't a huge savings, I don't know what is. And, of course, if you buy the DDPY DVDs for 25% off, you still get 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. Dallas's program has already helped thousands of people, and not just professional wrestlers like Scott Hall, Jake the Snake, and Mick Foley. DDPY helped disabled veteran Arthur Borman and literally thousands of people just like you and me get on the path to healthier living. So take control of your own health and your own fitness and get on the DDPY program today and take advantage of this huge sale. 25% off DDPY and all related merch at ddpyoga.com/Austin. That's ddpyoga.com/Austin. If you're in the market for a car, then you need to check out TrueCar.com and the TrueCar app. TrueCar gives you the price and information you need to feel confident about your purchase.
When you register with TrueCar, you'll see what other people in your local market paid for the car you want. From there, you can connect with a local TrueCar certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. TrueCar shows you real pricing on actual inventory, so you see competitive pricing offered to you by TrueCar certified dealers for vehicles that are actually on their lots. TrueCar makes car buying easy, no matter if you're looking for a brand new or used vehicle. There's over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide, and there are over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers. And over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar certified dealer network. TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP, so when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Steve Austin. Steve Austin. Unleashed. Unleashed.
Hey, let's talk about your Twitter account a little bit. @Hustler2754. I just pulled off some of the tweets that you've been sending out. You want to go through some of those and expand upon them?
Sure. What happens, Steve, I'm usually on the bike at the gym for an hour. So I got an hour to kill, right? So I do that. Or I'm on third shift while I'm working, and I got a kayfabe that I'm supposed to be working, but I'll be hitting some tweets on that, too.
Before we get to Twitter, tell me about these damn workouts. The other day you told me you said you worked out 3 times in one day. What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty simple because you just push yourself to the max. Okay, it's like I run in the fucking gym, and I got 30 minutes, okay? And then here's this son of a bitch. He's on my goddamn cable thing. So I was just going to do 100 reps right bicep, 100 reps left bicep, 100 reps triceps push down, 100 shrugs in a row, 100 front raises in a row, 100 side raises, okay? Then you go in 100 leg extensions, 100 leg curls, 100 presses, 100 lat pulls, 100 butterfly things for your chest, and 100 machine presses. And that takes about 30 minutes under perfect conditions, and you're always pushing yourself. But you walk out of there in 30 minutes just exploding, if you can explode at 63 years old with no testosterone, and just feeling great. There ain't nothing nothing better than working out, shit, shower, shave, and you're ready to kick ass and do whatever your real job is.
All right, we're going to come back to this in a little bit when you got into your bodybuilding, some of the contests that you entered. We'll get into that, but let's go through some of these tweets. Check this one out. You said, the object of wrestling is to win the match, not get all your shit in like a mark. You win it?
Yeah.
Make your foe shine because you're winning.
Well, when I get finishes, I said, look, you stupid son of a bitch, book backwards. I'm winning. So I'm going to make you look like the greatest son of a bitch and wrestler in the fucking world because I'm going to beat you decisively. So I'm going to beat somebody. And now if the roles were reversed, if you're going to beat me and decisively, I'm going to beat the shit out of you because I'm going to beat King Kong and you're going to beat King Kong decisively. So I know what you can do, but we don't need all them stupid false finishes that mean nothing anyway just to get your fucking shit in, and it ain't going to goddamn happen. I hate that shit because the false finishes should be saved for the upper echelon matches, the first so many matches you should never have an object, touch the fucking referee, stay in the goddamn ring. We're painting a boring thing of basics. We want basics. So if the first match is a sunset flip, in the main event, they can use that as a false finish. If the second match, if the finish is a goddamn O'Connor roll-up, we can use that as a false finish. So we can take all these finishes we use underneath, and we can use them as false finishes in the semi-main event and the main event. And then nobody ever goes outside until the last goddamn match. And we're telling a story. We're painting a picture. This ain't for you. This is a team effort. It's like in baseball, the guy's supposed to get on, the second guy bunts him over to second, and the third and fourth hitter's supposed to drive that son of a bitch in. And that's the way it is. So this is a team effort. Everybody with no ego does what they're told, does what the best you can do to get this product over so we all have a job, so we can run more towns and make more goddamn money.
And what you're saying,
I just hate.
But what you're saying is, like, if you work in a card, first match, stay in the ring. Whatever they tell you to do, 8 to 10, 10 to 12, just go out there, get the match, get the people off their ass, have a good match, but have a good back-and-forth match, whatever it is, finish, and then get out. Let the next guys come in there. They don't need to be going outside the damn ring, fighting, brawling, using the chairs, using the stairs, mm-hmm. all the cliche stuff. They need to keep their ass mm-hmm. in the ring so you can build to the main event. So,
right.
talking about all the false finishes, especially in the last few pay-per-views I've seen, everybody's using everything but the kitchen sink. The DDT has been so... Jesus Christ, the DDT, and it's sad that there's a poison named DDT because of the finish. When Jake the Snake Roberts used that motherfucker, yeah. I mean, holy smokes, it was lights out. And now it's basically used as a real weak or lame false finish or even a transition into something, but it's been bastardized so damn bad. There's no use in even hitting it because everybody knows it's not going to work, whether it's done in the middle of the ring or off the second rope into the ring.
Well, you're right, but that's on the office, and it's their money. If I'm the boss, nobody does the stunner except you. Nobody does the DDT except Jake. Everybody's got their own shit, and you stay away from it. If somebody accidentally does it, then the announcer buries them, saying, well, he don't do it as good as Jake. So all you're going to do is get the guy that's his signature move, you're just going to put them over. Unless we would bring in a stunner versus, unless we'd work a 6-month program where it's stunner versus stunner or something like that. You know what I mean? But everybody's got their own niche. And like when you have the first match, I said, okay, you just watch the first match. The second match, whatever they did, don't do it. The third match, you've seen two matches. Whatever they did, don't do it. The fourth match, you've seen all them together. Whatever they did, don't do it. If you have a problem with that, then you have no business being a professional wrestler. You're supposed to be fucking good. You're supposed to be a pro. You're supposed to be the cream of the crop. This is supposed to be your goddamn dream, and you should have dissected this with no ego, every kind of wrestling psychology there fucking is. I could fucking wound up on this shit, sorry.
There's a lot of guys back in the day when we'd be working, whether it's USWA or World Championship Wrestling or even WWF way back in the day. It'd be 4th, 5th, 6th on the card and wouldn't watch matches. And sometimes rip, you roll up and just everybody's working an arm. All of a sudden, the main event gets out there. They didn't pay attention to what was going on in the first 7-8 matches. And all of a sudden, they're working an arm. And the crowd's done seen it, probably five times, and all of a sudden they're doing the same shit. So if you ain't been watching the card, okay, arm, leg, back, mm-hmm. neck, you got to pick something different, because every now and then it's one of the boys will just get on a happenstance. Everybody works the arm or everybody works the leg, and then everybody's doing that the whole night. So the main event gets out there, and shit, guess what? They've already seen this set 6 times.
Well, you're right on all them, but I got arm, leg, neck, stomach, back, or brawl, baby. So I would tell everybody, if I'm writing them down when I'm booking, I said, work this body part. Use this as your anchor. Get your heat on this body part. So everything was different.
Gotcha.
And then that way, nobody's stepping on any toes. I remember one night Rick DeRude come in and started getting mad at me because I used a headlock. I said, well, goddamn, Rick, I didn't know you had the goddamn patent on that son of a bitch. Don't you know more than a headlock, please? Jesus Christ.
I was going to ask you about Rick Rude and the headlock spot and a couple of questions. I'm glad you went there. I was on a hunting lease in South Georgia with Rick Rude and Paul Orndorff. Goddamn, we had a blast. We didn't kill any deer. We just, we had fun. 3 guys in a cabin in the middle of nowhere. It was badass.
Uh-huh.
And those two, especially Rick Rude, were real characters. What was your relationship with that guy? The thing I appreciated about Rick was, hey, he was right up front. He would tell you right to your face what was on his mind. He wouldn't mince words.
Yeah.
He wouldn't stab you in the back. He was a man's man.
Uh-huh.
You can't say that about a lot of guys in the business. What were your thoughts on Rick?
Well, when I first met him, I was working for Bill Watts, and Watts paid me well to teach guys like. So I was working underneath, and I had black hair. He said, if you try and get over, I'm firing you. I said, don't worry. I can be as boring as the rest of them. So Rick came in, and I guess he had hepatitis or something. And hell, he must have weighed about 190 pounds or something. and this was he was really looking, because he was a tall guy.
Yeah.
And then he was like skinny as a rail in his first match back, and he was just really nervous, and his skills wasn't there and everything. But he sure picked up the game after he got out of there. And I think we talked about the story with it coming out of the Bayfront Center, and the Lincoln was gone from Memphis. He come in from Memphis to Tampa, and then all of a sudden, he didn't make the payment. He come out after the show, and that son of a bitch was gone. Oh man, I remember working with Paul down there for Cornette and Smoky Mountain. So I'm working, and hell, I used to go down the matches when Paul was starting down there with Jarrett. And how he was like a goddamn icon in Tampa from Tampa football and shit. And just a fucking stud. And I just fucking laughed. We got in the ring, didn't prearrange nothing. And it was just, all them guys from Tampa were just so fucking great. If you got trained in Tampa, you fucking got that shit. You know what I mean? He was so fucking good, so goddamn light. We had so much fucking fun. And it never touched in the ring before. It was just it was just so much fun. And you sit there and shake your head when you get two guys in there that have paid their fucking dues, had all your fucking how many thousands of matches. You can have so much fun and not break a goddamn sweat. And the business is just so much fun. Oh, shit.
And you're working the people. I feel like today almost right. The people are working the boys. But let me digress. Let's get into this next tweet you sent. You said, baby faces, let the heel be a heel to make the match easier. Faces, never cheat first or throw the first strike. Heels, don't be a cool heel. Let's talk about the first part. Let the heel be a heel to make the match easier. And faces, never cheat first or throw the first punch.
Okay, it's like, let me get my entrance in. Let me be cocky or what I'm doing. You're the good guy. Let them people hate me as much as they can. Don't threaten to punch me. I'll threaten to punch you. Then you ball your fist up, and I'll back away and bitch about that. So let me be the bad guy. You be the good guy. I'm a heel, but I'm not going to be a cool heel. I don't want cheers. If I want cheers, be a goddamn baby face. Get the hot women, the food, the better payoffs, and sell the goddamn gimmicks. But no, I want to be a heel because I love being a heel.
Do you think the first cool heel was? Or when did that trend start to happen in your estimation?
I don't know because I don't watch TV wrestling. So anything I'll do, I'll see something on my phone or something. But I know, guys. Now, I understand the wrestling heel that starts out patting himself on the back, and then the baby face catches up, then he starts surpassing, then he gets rugged with him. I understand all that. But the business has changed. It's like when they had the Shield going, walking through the crowd, them motherfuckers would have beat me half to fucking death and kicked you and thrown shit at you and tried to hit you with a chair and shit if you'd have walked through that fucking crowd like that. Just exposing the business, and when the biggest company in the world exposes the business, what are you supposed to do? Say, oh no, they're lying. When they show you how they do it, and they're showing how Harry Houdini does his tricks and shit, and then you just got to go with it because that's just the way it is, you know. So, but you still try and have some psychology with it, but. Now I'm fucking rambling again, Steve.
Well, you brought up a WWE, so there's my next tweet. WWE, well, it's your next tweet. WWE is VKM's company. It's his.
Yes.
So he will push
yes.
who he wants and do as he wants, just as you would do if you were in his shoes. Reality. That's what you tweeted.
Yeah. That's his.
Is that in response to all the people? Is that in response to all the IWC talking about they want so-and-so pushed or you're pushing so-and-so
yes.
too hard?
Yeah, that's it exactly. That's it exactly. Just sit back and enjoy the product. If you don't like it, don't watch it. Then, if he decides to change something, he will. But you don't tell him what to do. You wouldn't be I'd say, fuck you, you goddamn Mark. Go fuck yourself. This is my company. I've got long-range plans, which I'm not sharing with you. It's my company.
But people need to watch the, if you want to watch wrestling or watch WWE, whether it's Raw, SmackDown, whatever show you're watching, watch it for the sake of what's going on the screen. Don't concern yourself with the writing aspect of it. Watch the product.
Right. That's like everybody that watches NFL football, they think they're smarter than the coach, you know, because they watch, they're in fantasy football and they watch NFL every week. So, hell, they know what's going on more than the coach does. You know, he's only around those guys in film 20 hours a day. So what the hell does he know when the fans know more than he does? And wrestling's the same way, you know. So the thing about it, it used to be electricity in the air. It was like a UFC atmosphere. It was a contest. It was like a goddamn, since I'm from Indiana, IU-Purdue game. Where the it depends where it was at, where you had whoever was the baby faces and who was heels, but they love the baby faces and they hate the heels. Now you go to an event and it's sort of like the Ice Capade, or it's sort of like the Harlem Globetrotters, ha ha ha. Or we can get on TV if we do these yells and shit, and let's steal the show and we can be over. And I'm just strictly old school. I'm too old to change. I know what I like. I know it would still work because people are still basically the same. So that's that.
All right. You said your strikes are supposed to look vicious without hurting your opponent, not look phony and knock the shit out of them. Learn your craft. Practice. I understand what you're saying there. Can you give me an instance of somebody whose shit didn't look great but hurt the fuck out of you and vice versa?
I don't want to mention any names.
I understand
that. Some guy's looking like it knocks your dick off and they don't fucking touch you. Lanny Poffo could punch you right in the jaw, right in the mouth, right in the nose with that big right hand and not fucking touch you. It looked like it knocked your fucking head off. I can't help if he didn't get the push or whatever, but as far as the beauty of that fucking punch, that son of a bitch practiced that son of a bitch on me for I don't know how long before he got that thing down. And it's just a work of art. And then you have some, there's nothing worse than a punch that looks phony and knocks your dick off, right? Just like, I would call it like the Bulldog Brown kick, you know. Rest in peace, Bulldog, baby.
You know, another guy like Lanny Poffo was Ricky Morton of the Rock and Roll Express. They're fixing to go into the Hall of Fame for WWE. I don't know if you heard that or not.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, goddamn, right. Working with Ricky Morton was a dream just because.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, there's a tweet about it later on because I think you love working with Ricky too because he was another guy. He goes, Ricky's not worried about getting his shit in because he's going over. But that was the guy. All his shit looked pro style, snugged up. You couldn't feel a thing. All his punches were dead on, and they looked amazing.
Right.
And he was just a fantastic worker, fantastic seller, great fire, great mean streak. He had it all. He was amazing.
He got it. What can you say? He got it. Most guys don't get it, but he got it. Of course, he was a wrestler's kid. He was around the business his whole life. But then again, some guys still don't get it. So I don't know, but he was just real easy to work with. We'd work and we'd just call it a ring and we'd just fucking laugh the whole time. It was just so much fun. We knew we could give the people a guarantee. Ladies and gentlemen, there'll be no violence in this match. We guarantee it.
Hey, Rip, when was the first time you realized you could actually have fun inside the squared circle? Because as I was coming through the business in USWA and then in World Championship Wrestling in Atlanta, I think it was about 4 or 5 years in because, you know, I was so caught up in the grind of learning the mechanics, just learning one-on-one psychology. You know, you're serious because you don't know that you can actually have fun. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm out there with Jesus Christ. It was Brian Armstrong, Road Dog. And and we were out there in center stage having a TV match. And there was some shit going on. And I'm telling him, hey, man, look over here. You know, there was this hot girl in the crowd, and he goes, where? I said, I repositioned myself right there. He goes, oh, yeah. So we went over, fought outside the ring over to the guardrail, and I dropped him on the guardrail. But you know, after I realized I could have fun out there, it really took the pressure off of me. And this was still in the days where we're calling every single thing in the ring and basically finish everything. So when was it for you that you realized you could have that fun? Because that really lifted a load off my mind, the pressure, and just performance.
Well, when I started, I was just so fucking rotten. And I tell everybody, every mistake in the business I already made. So don't feel bad. You're all better than me when I started. So when I turned heel and I teamed up with Randy Savage in Nashville, I started getting it. And then after that, it wasn't any problem understanding it anymore. I was the world's horriblest babyface, but as a fucking heel, I understood it pretty well from my experience. Of course, I was surrounded to hell. I had the Popos. I had Ronnie Garvin. I had Boris Malenko. I had Randy Orton's dad. I had Bob Roop. I had all these guys that were great pros, and all I had to do was shut the fuck up and watch them and listen to them. So I was in like in hog heaven. I knew I was a shit compared to these great fucking wrestlers. I just wanted to be hopefully as good as them maybe 10 years from now, because this is like being a doctor. This shit is so fucking hard. It's because the moves are irrelevant. I mean, anybody can go on a diet. Anybody can work out. Anybody can look good. Anybody can do the moves. But to place this shit where you need to learn the fucking facials, to learn all the fucking the movements, the body language, why are you doing this, at what speed, to learn all this shit takes so much failure before you pull that little light bulb goes off in your head and you finally start to understand that shit. You'll be going back, you'll be smiling. I finally understand what the hell they're talking about now. Holy moly, was that fucking fun.
And you know what? Sometimes you get on that streak, rip, and then all of a sudden, right when you think you got it, you get this swell of confidence. You go out there and you shit the bed. You damn near kill a town. You're like, what the fuck? I thought I was picking this up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that happens. What happens a lot of times is we get pigeonholed into thinking every audience is different, right? And you have to fucking be able to read that audience. They said, no, they don't want comedy. They want a wrestling match. They want some fucking violence. You know what I mean? So you got to be able to read that son of a bitch. I got to be able to take that baby face and pull the best of what he can do. And if he can do five things, we're going to do that five things. And we ain't going to shoot for an A, but we're going to shoot for a C+. And I'm going to make these fuckers believe this son of a bitch is competitive. And that's all we want. And then we do whatever Finish the Office wants.
You know, it's funny how some of the crowds are, you know, when you go to, whatever loop you're on, whatever territory you're in, and you first match goes out there and they come back. Well, most everybody's watching, but if they're not, hey, man, how's the crowd? Oh, man, they're popping on everything, but, you know, basic shit. Depending on where you are or how long it's been since you've been there, I mean, sometimes it's the guy that works. And that's what I'm talking about, test of strength, the yay boo.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm talking about bullshit stuff. Some people, I mean, they want the main event shit, or they're ready for just wrestling in general. But, mm-hmm. you know, just by that, listen, that first match, go out there. Oh, fuck. Or it could be the opposite. These motherfuckers are dead. I don't even know why they bought a ticket. Mm-hmm. But you got to read that crowd, like you said.
What I tell everybody, I said the first spot, they haven't seen anything, is a tackle. And sell the son of a bitch. What happens? Oh, tackle, drop down, leapfrog, three arm drags, drop kick, go to the floor. They don't take none of it in. Sell the I remember me and Dick Murdoch, every spot was a tackle. And every tackle knocked me to the floor. And he just fucking laughed. And I told him, shut the fuck up, jabroni. You're the goddamn babyface. I'm the heel. I'm leading this sumbitch. He's fucking laughing. And then he was supposed to brain buster me, and he wouldn't. He said, no, I ain't brain bustering you. Fuck you. We did the greatest finisher of all time, the roll-up.
Hey, how was Dickie Murdoch to work with? Because, man, I watched, you know, that guy. Of course, I got a chance to meet him and talk to him a little bit. But this is when I was just, hell, I don't even know if I was Stunning Steve yet. Everybody knew that guy could work his ass off. And a lot of people considered him, you know, world champion material.
I thought he was world champion material. But then again, you got to remember, where did he break in at? Amarillo.
Right.
Here. We got all those from Brody to fucking Hanson to fucking Tito Santana to DiBiase. all those guys, right? Manny Pr- all the all Dory those guys Funk, that played Terry football Funk. And everything, right?
Right.
And here he is. He could work like a – he was a huge man, and he could work like a small guy. And then during his match when he's selling, all of a sudden he'd have to throw some Three Stooges comedy shit in there, and that would just turn them – the fucking Eddie Grahams and the goddamn Sam Mucknick fucking making them go crazy and shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he was so good. But I worked with him in St. Louis TV at the Chase when I was double fucking rotten. And I said, Murdoch, you fucking cocksucker, you about broke my fucking jaw in goddamn the Chase. And I didn't even tell him how rotten I was. He goes, well, hell, I remember that. You moved. Holy shit.
Hey. Rip, tell me about this tweet. Don't use baby oil in the ring, period. You're asking for trouble. Either you or your opponent can slip and get hurt. Be safe at all times. Please tell me about baby oil because I hated it when motherfuckers wore that stuff.
I wouldn't. If guys had baby oil, I'd make them go out. I know, but I tell them, but don't put none of that shit on. I ain't going to be there. Fuck you. I'm not going to get hurt. You're not going to get hurt. Slip off the fucking rope. I go to fucking slam you to slip off. Something's going to be screwed up because you're too goddamn lazy to go on a goddamn diet and do your fucking tanning and shaving and shit. Just fucking do it. I said, you're not training for the Olympia anyway. You're the babyface. It doesn't matter, but no fucking baby oil. Just a little, because you're going to fucking sweat out there. I don't even like the water because you're going to start sweating soon anyway. But baby oil, I've seen too many guys get goddamn hurt with that shit, and it's just... It's just something we don't need, because if I get hurt or you get hurt, hell, in the territory days, they'd float you a day or two, then they'd just fire your ass because you couldn't perform. The show must go on.
You know, and I'll tell you a thing about that baby oil or the hot stuff, the vasodilator you use to bodybuild. You know about that hot stuff. People, the guys that spray it on it make their veins come on and come out. And that was just, it was like baby oil on steroids. So, and it made your eyes burn if you got it in your eyes, and you're working with these guys. So inevitably it's going to get in your eyes, but those ropes are taped up with tape. And to the listeners out there, as you well know, Rip, if those ropes get all that oil on them, if you're going over the top rope with a clothesline or if someone shit cans you over the top, you're trying to grab that top rope to protect your livelihood, take a safe bump. You know, those things get all oiled up. Mister, watch out, because you might not have a chance to grab shit because you can't hang on to it because it's got all that baby oil on it. And so you can't grab the ropes, or sometimes if you go in, if the ropes are so slippery, one might slip over your damn shoulder, you hit your neck on that cable, or you go to send the guy in. You know, a lot of guys, instead of wearing black athletic tape, would use black electrical tape. Well, you put baby oil on top of black electrical tape that's on a baby oil wrist. You send a guy in, try to reverse it, and you slip. You lose the grip. You blow the high spot. Yep. You look like a couple of J-Brones. It's just a shit.
Yep. And once you do it, you don't get no do-overs. So it's a whole lot easier just not to use the goddamn baby oil.
Rip, because I was so damn ashy and white, I would pour water. You weren't a water guy. I would do the water, didn't do the baby oil, just so I wouldn't look so goddamn ashy. But let me ask you about this tweet here. This talks about some of the equipment. Always tuck the laces of your boots in. I saw a guy blinded from a boot lace hitting him in the eye on an enziguri kick. What the fuck happened, Rip? I never heard nothing like that. Now, when I broke in, they told me, hey, tuck your laces. I didn't know why, but I tucked them in because it was a cleaner look. I never did know about that safety factor. So what happened?
Well, just what happened right there. You know, when I got in, Randy Savage, he showed me how to do the parachute cord and to burn the ends, right? But some of the old guys, or later on, they would have the long shoelaces out. They might be out like 7 or 8 inches. So them things are flipping around and shit, right? And that goddamn Zarf hit the guy right in the eye. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, and it was probably a 1 in a million thing, but that's a 1 in a million thing that I don't ever want to see happen to me or anybody else. So just tuck your goddamn things in. That's like guys that are practicing in shirts and they kick them in the stomach and their foot gets... I had 3 guys tear their knee up because their foot got caught in somebody's T-shirt because the T-shirt was not tucked in. So you learn... By failure, you see all this shit of how to try to keep another accident from fucking happening.
Here's a little nuance. In a match, Let's talk about, you know, maybe it's again towards the end of a match. You said after a double knockout, please have the heel get up first. You want to make the face the underdog as much as possible.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's so simple. As long as the heel's always up first, the baby face gets more sympathy. And it's so simple that we've tried to change shit. Now, you can say, oh, yeah, the baby face could get up first, and he could go to slam him, and the heel could kick his legs, and his leg go back out. But why do that? Because he went down, then he got strong getting up first, now he's back down again. Just stay underneath. You're fighting from underneath because, A, you're going to win anyway. So just shut the fuck up and do as you're told. Don't think. You're a stupid baby face.
Would you have to tell a guy that?
Would I tell a guy that? Jesus Christ. That's my fucking problem my whole goddamn life.
Hey, whether you're building a house, a story, a game plan, or a wrestling match, it all starts with a solid base or foundation. That's one of the things you really harp on and preach is basic fundamentals. You're not into all the fancy moves and shit. You're all about wrestling and basics to be able to go that 30 minutes, to be able to go that hour, to be able to tell that story and to build that solid foundation with which then you can get to all the bells and whistles with.
Well, it's just like basketball. A guy I had in class, he was telling me about Kobe Bryant, how he was there 4 hours early, doing nothing but what he needed to do. He said he had to make 800 jumpers every day, you know what I mean? Because to be the best, nothing but basics. So it's muscle memory. No matter how tired you are, you still got that touch, you still got your form. And how in the world, in any sport, can you play a game and not practice? You might practice in that NFL, you're on that fucking shit squad, the practice squad, and you might not never get in a game and you're practicing every fucking play just for that one time when you can get in there. And it's nothing but basics. Basics, basics, basics. But since we know wrestling is not real, they don't think they need to do the basics. They want to do all their cool shit to get their three. There's got to be 9 flies to the floor every in each match, and there's got to be how many 360s. But let's fool the fans so we can kick out on all of them, so that way we can be tough. Let's kill every move there is. Holy shit! Don't get me going on that one.
I'll give you something else to go on. If you wear kick pads in your match, you ever think the fans know you're trying to protect your opponent where you're supposed to be trying to kill them?
Yeah, so that's pretty simple, isn't it?
You got an axe to grind about these kick pads on the shin.
Yeah. It's just like Randy Orton's dad. He would give you a knee drop. Then he would pull that knee pad down. Now all of a sudden he's got bone on bone, doesn't he? Then you would double sell that son of a bitch and maybe get a little fucking gap and roll the fucking floor and everything. But here we have fucking kick pads. No, I'm wearing these pads so I don't hurt you. Well, how fucked up is that when we're supposed to give the illusion at least we're trying to beat somebody's ass? Now what hurts more? A guy's boxing with 16-ounce gloves or a guy's fucking bare fucking knuckles. It's the same fucking shit. And this is how stupid we are, and the promoters allow that fucking shit. I'm just fucking old. I guess there's too much reality in that shit. I don't know.
But that's one that I hadn't even thought of until you brought it up. I was like, oh, God, that's an interesting one. I never looked at it that way, and I should have. So that's one that missed me, but it completely makes sense to me.
But you didn't wear kick pads, right?
No, dude. And there's for a while when I was a dumb motherfucker in WCW, you know, I wore my knee pads just like everybody else did. And then I said, man, I'm going real old school. I'm just going to shit can these things and just not wear them. I'm wearing my short trunks and my boots. That's it. And so I did that for a couple of years. And people always ask me why. And to this day, I can't tell you why. It was just something I decided to do. But looking back, probably should have kept knee pads on.
Well, I had knee pads for years. But you know how they lose the elasticity or whatever?
Yeah.
And I was so fucking cheap, I wasn't going to buy no new ones, right? Then some bitch would slide down my ankles all the time. So Regal gave me them red ones that he sewed up for me. They weren't real knee pads, but they were just little like...
Those neoprene sleeves.
Yes. So all of a sudden, I wore them some bitches.
Hey, you brought up a a common friend of ours, a mutual friend of ours, and Steve Riggle, Lord William Riggle, whatever you want to call him. I just call him Steve. Where and when did you meet him? Because my first memory of Steve Riggle, when he came over from England, World Championship Wrestling, he worked with somebody. I don't know, he was on before I was or right after I was. It doesn't matter. And I was just kind of a mid-card guy at the time. And he went out there, and I watched his match. And I said, God damn, he was out there selling his ass off. And when he made a comeback, he had great fire. And immediately I went up to him and I said, hey, man, I said, my name is Steve Austin. And he said, hey, Steve Riggle. And I said, hey, man, I just want to tell you, man, I love your work. I said, that was awesome. And, he, you know, he's very humble. And, you know, thanks. And so me and him had become real close friends over the years. And to this day, we're still friends. And he was a hell of a goddamn worker. So how was it that you and him befriended each other? Because he always says great things about you.
Well, we were in, I went in to work for Big Fat Otto, right? Otto in Austin,
Otto Voss,
Germany.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he was there. Now, he got bumped the year before for something, but he was there. Fit was there. Dave Taylor was there, right?
Yep.
So me and the Lord, we roomed together and went in the caravan in Hanover and Bremen. And then we stayed in the hostels in Vienna and Graz. And when we were in Graz, I said, hey, you want to go WCW? He said, what? I said, you want to go WCW? I'll get you in. He says, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to write a letter for you like I'm you. But I know what Bill Watts wants. So he wrote him a letter. And then within a matter of days, when he talked to Chrissy, she said that, we got a letter here from Bill Watts. And so he offered him a job, but he wouldn't go because he was booked. So Watts liked him even more because he was going to stay the whole season there.
Right.
So that was cool.
Man,
that was fun.
I've heard a lot of stories about the caravans over there in Germany. Were y'all working straight time or y'all working 5-minute rounds like I used to watch on World of Sport?
No, it was the rounds. It was the rounds.
How did you like that? That sounds really tough to me, to work 5-minute rounds.
That's the easiest thing in the world. Holy shit. Just think. Let's say we're going 5 rounds, right? And we can tell a different story every round, can't we? You could hurt your knee. We could work on a knee, or you can work any. You can change everything.
Right.
And you can have the heel barely holding on, or the baby face holding on for the round, you know what I mean? And it's just so much fun. And I never got to do that before. And then I started loving that style. And then they had the speaker where they find the guys, right? So Finley was so good, he'd have a championship match. And that some bitch make about $800. They had the evil referee finding the good guy, and the marks would come out and pay the fucking fines. Then they would split it with like Fit against the babyface, and then the speaker, the guy who announced, and the referee, they were all in on it. So they all cut that money up, right? And you can make a fucking... we got a kayfabe on the thing. Well, what the fuck, right?
Hey, but when you mentioned Dave Taylor, Steve Riggle, and Fit Finley, man, all three of those guys can work their ass off, but Fit Finley might be one of the best workers I've ever seen.
I come back, and I said, Anderson, there's this guy named Fit Finley. I said, it's a different style, and it's not television-oriented, but I think this motherfucker is the best heel I've ever seen. And, Ole goes, well, how big is he? I said, fuck, Ole, I don't know. I didn't even think about how big he was. I just knew that son of a bitch was the man.
Yep.
And I don't care if he's 5'2" or 7'3". He was the fucking man. And... he took control of everything. So that baby face was always an underdog. But when it was time to fucking make that fucking comeback, and he'd fucking staggered, finally take that fucking bump, and man, I was just a fucking mark for him. Jesus Christ, he was so fucking good.
Well, I was too, and you always talk about mannerisms. And he had the mannerisms. He was just an evil, diabolical son of a bitch. He'd take as many shortcuts, cheat as much as he could. When he covered, a lot of guys try to use that cross face. He did it with malice. He would look like he was always trying to inflict pain. He had a mean streak in him, and he just had that posture. Everything he did, he intended to hurt you. So, but he took control of that ring. If there was ever a ring general and a fucking a technician that was a solid 10, it's him. That's how much I respected his work.
When I went over there, I was going in as a heel, right? And the first night there was the numbers were wrong. He says, "Can you do a baby face queer gimmick?" I said, "Fuck, I work with Adrian Street for a second." "Yeah, hell yeah." So after the first night, they said, "Oh, no, you do this." I said, "What?" I said, "I'm a fucking heel." "Oh, no, this is better." I said, "Well, okay, you're the boss. You're paying me. That's what you want." So I became a fucking the shirt lifter, the poof, the dinner masher. So did the queer gimmick. So anyway, the first time I worked with Fit, he fucking destroyed me. He gave me nothing, right?
Yeah.
So I'm laying there. So I'm making him carry me out. And I said, "I think he gave me too much love." Because you got to remember, the English guys, it was a big deal for them to go to Germany, okay? And they would bring in Americans, so that it would cut their buddies out, you know what I mean? So they pretty much hated us. It's just like when I go up and work for Stu, they get mad because that made a local Canada boy couldn't work, and they'd bring me in there, and I would be the heel till I would take the boys out and have a good time, and then I was a ringleader. But going in, they didn't like the Americans because it was easier for the Americans to go there than for them to try and go to a different country.
Man, I'm just guessing, but the caravan lifestyle seemed like a nonstop party, was it?
Oh, my God. Well, I'm not going to mention any names, but when I went into one guy's caravan, and I've seen a lot of guys with two girls, but when he had three, that motherfucker was over with me. Three of them. He says, "No, I said, "Oh, no." This is before camera phones and shit, right?
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, man, I wish I had a Polaroid." You know what I mean? I said, "You are the most over son of a..." He said, "No, but I was..." I said, no. "They're all for you." "And I'm going to tell everybody what a stud you are." "Oh, no. But God, that was, it's just like, just think, we was in Hanover 70 days in a row, wrestling. Then the last night they had the big show. They had the big show and they went to the big building and did 10,000 people. They'd bring Snooki in, they'd bring the Road Warriors in, they'd bring Eddie Gilbert come in, and they would have, it would be like, you had to, they'd buy, people would save all year to get season tickets. And like if Snooki would come in, it'd cost an extra $4 or whatever. Well, you have a chance, or Fit might have a championship match, and they'd bring in Eddie. He worked with Eddie Gilbert, and Eddie says, "What's he like?" I said, "Oh, you're in for a rude awakening, love." Eddie goes, "I've never seen anything like that." I said, "He's the human buzzsaw." So before every match or the night, Otto will go, "Remember, no poking in the eyes, no kicking the balls, and don't drink before your match." So the first thing Fit would do was poke him in the eyes, kick him in the balls, and he'd be drinking whiskey and something else as Otto's talking to him. God, he was just like the bad boy of a movie or something. It was just whatever you wasn't supposed to do, he was going to do it. He'd go to the club at night, and he'd say, "Tell me when you have to go to the bathroom." I'd say, "Fit, I gotta go to the bathroom." All of a sudden, he'd get up and walk towards the bathroom. It was like a parting of the Red Seas. All the marks would just, they'd see him coming. They'd just run away from him.
Really?
Because he'd always break people's thumbs and stuff. So, oh, wow. And that was, and I'm a pacifist. I'm nonviolent. And then here's this guy. I think he woke, hell, his dad was a goddamn, the wrestling coach for wherever country he was from.
From Ireland.
Wow. Yeah.
Before shooting, now how would he break these thumbs?
He just grab it and twist it. And you know how it's just tendon, right?
Right.
And these guys' thumbs would be hanging sideways and shit. And your thumbs never heal up either.
That mean streak he had in the ring was a shoot.
Yes, he was just at one time. Now he's not that way anymore. But he was pure evil. But he was funny though.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think he meant any malice by it. I think that was fun to him. As fucked up as that sounds. I mean, it's kind of malicious, but I don't think he meant it in a bad way. That's just who he was.
Yeah.
Hey, talk to me about this tweet. You only have so many bumps on your bump card. Use them wisely and sell them properly. Think longevity. It's your body. Bumps on a bump card.
Well, we all get carried away.
Yep.
And we could all take three arms, a hip toss, and a slam. Or you could take one hip toss, crawl out of the ring, half-ass crawl. You can take one and act like it's 10. Because we've only got so many goddamn bullets in the gun. And then we don't have any more. And our bodies are the same way. So it's best to learn that. You can preach it all you want, but it ain't going to happen. And I know that. But I feel better preaching it. Because, you know, once you get an injury, like if you hurt your left knee, then your right knee becomes your bad one. You hurt your left shoulder, you compensate, then the other one gets so bad. So, or you hurt the left side of your back, then the right side gets bad. Because you're always protecting yourself on these bumps and everything, and then you're pretty much completely messed up. So if you learn to sell your bumps properly, then you don't have to do as many of them. But that's what that was all about, because guys do, we all do way too much stuff, you know, because we love to perform. We love to take bumps, because when you're young, you don't even feel them. And you just love the rest of the business.
Yeah, but and that's like, you know, when you've got, you know, 10 years in the business, that's when you kind of smarten up to it. I mean, certainly maybe some people smarten up faster than I did, but, you know, in your mid-30s, like, fuck, people will tell you, hey, slow down, kid, you only got so many bumps on your bump card. You don't understand it. Hey, fuck you, I'm good.
Right.
No, okay, now I'm 52. Now I see what they were talking about 10 years later. So it's not till 10, 15, 20 years later you're going to feel this shit. So when guys are telling you that, they're trying to give you a little heads up. First of all, if you're really, really over, you ain't got to do all that shit. What are you doing it for? You're not working the people. You're out working yourself. You're putting yourself in a lot of positions that you ain't even got to be in, and you're over. So you got so many cards. You only got so many bumps on your bump card. You got to take that to heart.
Yeah, that's like my mom said, Jimmy Valiant, he doesn't do anything. I said, Mom, that's why he's over. Everybody else wants to do everything, and he just sits there and bobs his fucking head. And he's over. So the hardest thing in wrestling is to slow down and not to do so much stuff. But we all want to run instead of fucking. We all want to run down and fuck the one girl instead of walking down and fucking them all, right? And that's in wrestling the same way.
But going off that rip, reaction does not mean you're over. All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off into the sunset. Before we do, I want to thank my guest, Rip Rogers, for coming on the show and dropping a little bit of knowledge. We'll have part two with Rip, I believe, coming up next Thursday. And before I sign off, I want to mention that Rip Rogers has a GoFundMe account, Rip Rogers Raw Deal. He's trying to get 16 G's up to go buy him a new set of wheels. So if you care to contribute to that, check out Rip Rogers' Raw Deal at GoFundMe.com. Anyway, thank you, Rip. It was good talking to you. Hey, part two of Rip Rogers next week. More knowledge from the pro wrestling guy who's been around the horn forever and speaks a whole lot of common sense and knows the damn wrestling business in and out. As far as something to watch, I was looking at some videos of Rip Rogers wrestling Lord Steven Regal down there in WCW with Larry Zbyszko doing color commentary. But I really enjoyed his talks when he was sitting down with Danny Cage over at the Monster Factory, just sitting in a chair. I think it was Monster Factory Episode 5, but just get on YouTube and type in Rip Rogers at the Monster Factory. And Danny Cage talks, but then Rip is out there sitting with the guys. He just starts, you know, just talking about shit, dropping more knowledge and shooting the breeze. So those were the things that I enjoyed watching from him. But you can find him all over YouTube. Hey, man, a couple of quick plugs here. I just released 8 brand new shirts from the Broken Skull Ranch, Broken Skull Challenge, at ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin, also at BrokenSkullRanch.com. But Ryan Bark and the guys at Pro Wrestling Tees cranking out these shirts. And it's all the latest shit I wore on the Broken Skull Challenge. The baddest, coolest, toughest damn show on television. And if you're thirsty, if you want the best damn IPA on the planet, it's Broken Skull IPA at El Segundo Brewing Company. And if you live in California, you can get it at Whole Foods and Total Wines. If you ain't in Cali, check out InsideTheCellar.com and see if they ship to your state. And everything it has to do with me, you can find at BrokenSkullRanch.com, including the Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife. And I got to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, because that's how I'm able to do this podcast for you free twice a week. And you can find all my sponsors at PodcastOne.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. And just a reminder that the Steve Austin Show is also a participant in the Amazon Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for me to earn fees by linking to Amazon.com. You can link to Amazon at PodcastOne.com by clicking on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page. Hey, folks, keep listening. The 60-second AP News headlines are coming up next. Until then, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of Steve Austin Unleashed every Thursday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.